At 26 minutes past the hour, we attempt to elevate the conversation with Dr. Don Clark, who joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and gotten to be an awfully good friend of the station, so much so that he gets to choose his own topic. Every week he does. Yeah.
Really?
But
wow. That's news. No.
It's like we're on the same page anyway, because we'll send suggestions and he's, oh, yes. Okay. All right. So we've got two topics for you today. First, both of them we've talked about before, but in each case, there's new information out that says the old information was done poorly. And that's what we need to highlight in this. Don, how are things in Garden Valley this morning?
Well, it's a little cool this morning. We've had some chilly mornings, not freezing temperatures, but in the 40s, mm-hmm. which seems to be coming a little early this year.
Wow.
Because sometimes we were in the hundreds in October, and now we're, you know, down to the 40s, and our high is going to be in the 70. Mm-hmm. I mean, 70, low 70s. So,
yeah, but I think by the end of the week, it goes back up near 90, because these shoulder seasons, it's just like it was up north, David, right? The jet stream in that case up north flips north or south, so it gets cold, it gets warm, and it finally settles down, and then you've got winter. In the south, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what does that.
Sometimes we get a dip, a really big dip, so we'll see. Folks have been saying, because it was such a crazy hot summer, that we're in for a pretty cold winter. So
that could be bad news for electric vehicles, because it says in this article, this is from the Cornwall Alliance, that among other drawbacks to EVs are cold temperatures, because the battery power goes way down. I don't know if you all know that, but if a battery freezes, it doesn't work anymore.
It doesn't work as well, of course. Mm-hmm. Speaking about EV vehicles and, you know, the big push, everybody needs to go out and buy their EV vehicle.
Mm-hmm. I want to read this sentence to you first, because this is such a government okay. sounding sentence here. I'm just delighted in this. This is part of the report of it's the Federal Register Volume 88. It's a 56,000 page plus report that has an environmental assessment that accompanies the Department of Transportation's newly proposed fuel standards. And among other things, it says the following: net social economic benefits for passenger cars remain negative across alternatives. That sounds like government talk to me.
Yeah, well, it's, in other words, there's no benefit. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, there's a negative benefit for doing this.
They could have just said that, you know.
You know, it's like, come on, folks, what's the deal?
And they're not exactly trumpeting this news either. The Cornwall Alliance
buried in this report that they did, because we can't tell anybody the real truth here, that we're trying to become completely dependent on China. And so we can't tell folks that this is just a big hoax. And so they bury these things. And EV vehicles, are they a good thing? Are they neutral? Are they just another alternative form of transportation? They're not going to solve our environmental issues, as been purported, because even in this same report, it says another revelation is that even by the Department of Transportation estimates, the proposed legislation would reduce average global temperatures in 2060. I mean, that's 2060 by 0.000%. In other words, it's not going to have any effect whatsoever. So why the big push for EV vehicles is a question that we all should be asking ourselves. Well, if you want to spend more, for example, for an EV vehicle, go right ahead, because Kelly Blue Book estimates that If you are looking for a full-size vehicle, then you're going to spend $11,000 more on an EV vehicle the same size. But if you're looking for a compact car, the savings, or the spending in this case, the negative savings, is $30,000 more for the equivalent EV vehicle. Did you know that the car prices today, yes, there's some inflation involved, but I didn't know this until I read the article, that the car prices for a regular gasoline-powered vehicle is subsidizing the research and development of these EV vehicles. Now, doesn't that put the feather in the hat?
Well, it's logical because if any company's losing money on their, and Ford is losing money on EVs, they got to make that up somewhere.
Oh, they do, and so they're shifting. shifting the cost by. It's the same thing they do in hospitals. You know, they say, "Oh, we've got this free medical care for all these people that come in," but those people that can pay the bill, they double the cost because, oh, we got to pay for this other person, and you have to argue long and hard to get your bill down. When you go to the hospital to say, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. $56 for an ACE bandage? I don't think so. So it's cost shifting. And that's exactly what the automotive industry is doing. And, thanks to the CEO of Ford, he actually went out and tried to use one of his EV trucks to take a journey. And he found out quickly that, you know what? This is taking me an awful long time to travel such a short distance that maybe these things aren't quite ready yet for prime time. So what are people, really, really using these things for? And not to mention that, you got to plug these things in and, a typical trip. For example, the Tesla says you can get 270 miles on one charge of a Tesla. And so it's going to take you 4.5 hours maybe to travel that distance. But it's going to take you another hour to charge the vehicle, assuming you can find a supercharge station convenient to where you're running out of electricity on your batteries. And so they're not really practical, for long distances. Maybe in the urban areas where you're just going to work and it's not all that, great of a distance. And then you can come home at night and plug your EV vehicle in, and so you can charge your vehicle that way. But don't plug it in your garage, because if it catches on fire, guess what's going to happen to your house? So you got to plug it in outside in order to be safe that your EV vehicle is not going to catch on fire and cause issues there. So, and then if you look at, one of the minerals, if you will, or the metals that is in these EV batteries is nickel. And the price of nickel over the past 6 years, because of needing to develop all these batteries, has doubled. It's gone from 10,000 per metric ton to 21 over. So it's over doubled the cost in 6 years. So what's going to happen when we say, you got to produce 10 times as much of these batteries? The cost is going to go astronomical. So the cost of these vehicles is just going to keep escalating and escalating because the cost of the raw materials are escalating. Not to mention that China owns 85% of the rare earth mining areas around the world.
There's another factor that has just dawned on me from this article too, and that is how do you sell a used electric vehicle? Now, if you keep the car for 10 or 12 years, the article points out it'll be on its second or third new battery. Batteries cost about $10,000 a piece. So you've put the original purchase price, which is nothing to sneer at, and the cost of those batteries you put in the car to keep it going for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years, the value of the car, what you've got sunk into it, keeps going up. So how do you sell it for maybe its original price?
You're not going to get the original price.
You don't.
You know, even with gasoline-powered vehicles, you don't get the original price.
When you buy a used car, you expect it to be cheaper than it was when it was a new car. In the case of EVs, that may not be the case.
And that may not be the case. And because, you want to sell your vehicle, I mean, my vehicle is no longer running anymore, so I want to sell it. And if you don't replace the battery before you sell it, you're not going to get pittance for it because it's not moving, so there is a problem. And so, yes, you have to keep, pumping money into it. And that $10,000 price, because of the other factors we just talked about, is going to just keep going up and up and up because of the cost of the batteries and the cost of manufacturing the batteries and the materials that go into the batteries. So, it seems to be a lose-lose situation. But, studies are finding that, there's a certain percentage of the population that are buying these EV. Not very much. It's like 2%, I think the article mentioned somewhere. And so who is buying these vehicles? Well, it turns out you can't use them for long trips. So it can't be your primary vehicle. It's got to be your secondary vehicle. And maybe you go to and from work or to and from the grocery store. So you're making short trips, excuse me, as opposed to long trips. And so you have to have another vehicle, a gasoline-powered vehicle, in order to take any trip of any distance. So it's the wealthy, the upper class, if you will, or the white-collar folks that are buying these vehicles and using them, to go, like I said, to and from work or to and from the grocery store and having a quiet ride because, you don't hear the gasoline engine or anything like that. It's pretty quiet vehicle. So it's more a luxury item right now instead of a commodity, like personal computers have become or your cell phones have become. So it's quite interesting what's happening. And as you mentioned earlier, the auto manufacturers, excuse me, are losing money on these things. And so they're shifting the dollars and they're trying to grab dollars from their normal gasoline power engines vehicles to finance their EV. And as Ford, Ford has said, wait, we're going to back off on this technology. We're not going to jump in on this because, quite frankly, it's not ready for full time. Mm-hmm. Now, I can imagine a day, at some point in time, where they'll continue to refine these vehicles, and they'll put artificial intelligence in them, and so I can see a day where these vehicles are going to be used within the cities, and maybe you own one, maybe you just rent one, or maybe instead of calling Uber, or maybe you call EV Uber. Uber or something like that, the car, just comes to wherever you are, picks you up, and it drives itself to wherever you're going. It's got a nice, pleasant voice, and it says, "Where would you like to go?" and actually knows your name, so will actually talk to you in a nice, friendly voice, and you tell it where you want to go, and it, takes you there in the shortest possible.
Maybe some pleasant chat. They're like, how are the kids? Okay, how's the job going?
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Just yeah. talk to you and just find, you know.
Nice weather we're having here, huh?
Mm-hmm. In all of this, and how's your dog, and how's your cat doing? I heard that your cat ran away. Did you
will startle you how much this artificial intelligence knows about you and what you do for, yeah. Another factoid here that has surfaced on this, and again, cold weather driving, if you have to run the heater in the car, and it's an EV, you reduce your range by 41%.
Well, everything takes energy, and
my brother-in-law's kid drove up the cities last winter in his new EV, and he had to leave the heater off, and it was in the middle of January, and he said they had coats and gloves and 2-3 pair of pants, I mean, in the car, because they froze all the way up. I mean, it was bitter cold. Yeah.
We're talking again about an article on EVs that the information comes from a government report that you're not going to hear publicized. I put a link to this article in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. If you'd like to check on the article yourself, maybe you're thinking about buying a car. This is not meant to dissuade you, but it's meant to dissuade you. It's with the facts here. So take a look at it here. We've got another topic ahead, and this time it's another situation where all the old information that's put out, in this case by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is demonstrably false, wrong, poorly done. Don, take us into global warming here. What's going on with this new report?
Well, it's these two folks, Connolly and colleagues wrote an article back in 2021 that says, hey, folks at the IPCC, maybe we're not calculating the contribution of the sun. Maybe we're underweighting that and weighting too much the contribution of human activity in our calculations. This is the reason why we're coming up with the wrong answer for global climate change. And indeed, you know, the IPCC responded back.
That's the United Nations outfit, yeah.
So the Intergovernmental Agency on Climate Change, mm-hmm. the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, wrote back and said, well, you know, you're not estimating global temperatures correctly, and you've got contaminated data, and the estimates of the solar activities is not correct, and so, you know, you guys are off base, we're on base. And so they wrote another article. They did more research, and they wrote another article and said, hey, you know what? You guys are taking all your temperature measurements are in the urban areas. You're not looking at what's happening in the rural areas or what's happening over the ocean or what's happening over most of the surface of the globe. You are only taking primarily measurements of temperature in the urban areas. And so they have weighted this is the IPCC group has weighted their studies and their equations, if you will, based on urban warming, which we know occurs. You know, your concrete cities are very much warmer than the countryside because of all the concrete and the absorption of the solar energy. And, of course, you've got the concentration of the population in those areas, and you've got more automobiles in those areas. And so all of that adds together to basically warm up the cities a degree or so over the surrounding countryside. And so, you know, these folks, Connolly and company, redid their calculations, took more data, and came back and said, hey, you know, what is driving the temperature, at least in the countryside, which makes up in the oceans, which makes up most of our global temperature, is the sun. And the solar irradiance is having a major impact. And we've plotted, we've looked at, you know, North America, we've looked at the oceans, we've looked at tree ring growth rates that correlate with basically temperature of the earth. The warmer it is, the fatter the tree.
That's the way you can look back and look back in history to get to glean some readings of what temperatures were like centuries ago. Yeah.
Yes, and that's kind of how they guess what the temperature was you know, looking at tree rings and even looking at glacier models, and they all correlate with the sun's activity, lo and behold. And you don't have to take into account, you know, our CO2 emissions and all of this type of stuff. So these folks, you know, actually in their paper, they made a statement that says, you know, in scientific investigations, it's important to avoid beginning your analysis with your conclusion decided in advance.
Well, what a revelation. I mean, that is. Yeah.
You know, we want global warming to be caused by humans, so therefore that's what we're finding. Uh-huh. And he says, it's important not to do that. We got to avoid that. We got to avoid bias. Otherwise, you might end up with a false sense of confidence in your findings. It seems that the IPCC was too quick to jump on their conclusions. So it is, it really is comical because, you know, these folks have basically pulled the rug out of the IPCC people and said, you know, all this money that you're funding, you know, for this research to come up with the right results, you know, if you tell people, we'll give you grant money if you come up with this conclusion, guess what? They're going to find some reason to come up with your right answer, with the answer that you're looking for. And that seems to be exactly what is happening.
It's thoroughly skewed. And if we can weave together these two articles, the summary sentence would be that electric vehicles are of no value in fighting the global warming that's not happening.
Yes. At least it's not caused by human activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not... That's the question. You know, how much is human activity contributing to global warming? And the answer to that question today is, I don't know. We don't know. We really don't know. And it's not as much. It's definitely not a prominent factor in what we're seeing as far as temperature changes rising and falling, for that matter. Because the temperature goes up and then the temperature goes down, and it's going to continue to do that until Jesus returns, when right before he returns, it's going to get quite warm.
Which I figure is going to be next Wednesday, I think.
And
the way things are going.
And he won't be driving an EV.
There's no need.
No, well, probably not. No, yeah. He's
just watch those Teslas go by and be comfortable in your little Equinox or whatever you're driving around here. Gasoline powered, yeah. Don, thanks so much for bringing clarity to the situation. And again, this both these articles have to do with reports that are not being made public. That is the new research on global warming, and you got to dig for this stuff. And I suppose if it comes from the UN, you should take it with a grain of salt right now, because there's obviously an agenda there. They just can't be taking it, whether it's politics and war and peacekeeping or the World Health Organization, or I hate to be hard on the UN, but we need to be hard on the UN and figure it's not worth the investment we're making, for sure. So, Don, thanks very much. Again, I want to mention the website, creationmoments.com. There you will find a wealth of information that has to do with the biblical story of creation. Helps you explain it to people that don't understand that the whole creation took 6 days and followed by a day of rest. And the history of all that is right there in Genesis. Take a look and visit creationmoments.com. Don, thanks very much. We'll look forward to next week.
Okay? Thanks, Don.
All right. Well, very good.
Bye-bye.